Hello.
Hello.
How's it going, buddy?
Pretty good. How are you?
You sound tired.
Yeah, I guess I'm a little tired.
Are you standing at your desk? Are you at your
No.
stand-up desk?
No. I'm seated. I use my personal laptop for podcasting.
Oh.
So I got my laptop just open on the ottoman, and I got my headphones connected and stretched out to my head.
There you go. And you're ready to record.
Ready to record. I got a doggy next to me.
Yeah, so do I. My doggie's got a tummy ache too. She's got diarrhea. But she did awesome, man. We have like she got up with me this morning and I had to go to the bathroom. And I heard her. I said, oh, she probably needs to go too. And then she was gone when I got out of the bathroom and I was like, what the hell? And I didn't even notice it until I got back from the walk, but she had an accident by this like plastic. You know, we have this plastic anti-static thing that goes over the carpet. So it doesn't generate a lot of like static electricity. And she went on that. So that was like perfect because you know, you just wipe that clean. You get it clean instead of having it soak into carpet or anything. So that was a good deal. She was a good girl, even though she was a bad girl.
Yeah, they seem to have good instincts as far as that goes. They don't like to go to the bathroom in their home. Mabel, she had an accident one time. She went down to the basement to do it. And we found it down there.
It's the bark box, huh, Harley? There was something in there that didn't agree with your belly.
One of the treats that came with it.
Yeah, one of those long sticks. We had a Thanksgiving themed one.
Yeah, that was the one that came from Mabel too.
But did you get a turkey with yours?
No, I think they must do different ones for different dog sizes, 'cause Harley must get the large dog size or
Yeah,
something.
she got a turkey and a huge like fall leaf pull rope.
Yeah, Mabel got that. She got that, and instead of the turkey, she got a corn on the cob.
Yeah, I saw that. Corn in the
That was
cob
pretty
and
funny.
then she got like two. She got like two bags of treats and then one long, like two stick beef sticks, I guess. I don't know what they were. And I think that's what upset her belly, but it's hard to tell. Because we recently lost our DVR. So like our DVR died and we weren't HD yet. We were pushing it off, saying that, you know, maybe we'll clear off the DVR and then we'll get a DirecTV HD receiver. And the thing just died. So we had to get one. And Harley's really good with like people in the house, but she gets hyper like for about 5 minutes. She wants to be in that person's business like big time and
Gets excited.
scratch them and jump on them. So I had to put her outside. And I gave her a lot of junk to try to preoccupy her, like big bones, and I don't know, there was this like hip thing that we got from a bark box, and what she ended up doing is not eating any of it but burying everything, like digging holes in throughout the yard and burying all the stuff, and then coming back to the door, and so she had like holes all over. There's still something buried. She dug one up and pulled it back out and brought it inside and ate it, but the other ones she didn't. They're still buried out there somewhere, I think. She's
That's
funny that
funny.
way. She like stores food. But anyway, what I was getting to, long story short, is we got a new Dish Network receiver that uses the Wi-Fi. And I noticed last night on DC Noise, there was like a degradation, like, and it was on my end because I had Daryl initiate the call after I started losing it. And I think it's because that receiver's like pulling stuff for the what do they call it? On-demand stuff. And I think it eats my bandwidth. So and I have a really old router, which I'm gonna go buy a new router probably today.
Yeah, I should upgrade every router sometime, but I wonder if there's settings that you can change so it doesn't push the content unless
Yeah,
you want it to or
I tried
something.
to last night, like, but then it got really stable, and it's weird because you think when the receiver's off, it would pull less, but I think it pulls more. I think it knows that it should do all the downloads and affect stuff when you're not watching. When Barb came down and started watching TV, which I thought would make it worse, it stabilized. And we recorded a long fucking time, like it was over 4 hours yesterday. And the first two were bad. Like it was, I would like drop signal like for every 20 minutes. But I'm hoping that it's more stable with our connection. We'll see.
Yeah, it probably does download more when it's off. I know a lot of the current gaming systems are set up that way. That'll sometimes it'll disable download or it'll pause the download of a game or something in the background if you start up a game and are playing it, so it
Yeah.
can dedicate the
It wants,
bandwidth to the
yeah, it
game.
wants to optimize itself for the time. But it is an awesome upgrade. Like, I never had HD before, even though I've seen HD before and it's good. And I like the on-demand stuff because even though we lost an awful lot of stuff, we still got a couple of things that we could still watch, you know? The only thing that I was pissed off is we lost the strain like the last two episodes. So I'm gonna have to try to go to FX and see if I could watch the last two.
Yeah, I think you can go to the FX website, and as long as you have, you can log in with your cable provider login
Yeah.
and watch them there, I think. But yeah, that stinks. I mean, at least in this day and age, there's so many other options that
It's
you'll
just
always have
all
something to watch, but
it's all additive options though. You know what I mean? It's like I have to go to Hulu for this and pay for that and go here for that. Whereas I like the DVR option more. Just set up a subscription and give it to me because I hate watching TV real time. I don't watch TV real time.
Oh yeah, I can't. It's been years since
It
I've
was a
watched a
nightmare. The
show.
only show that we watched real time the whole week until we got the new receiver was The Muppets. And it's just 'cause we were both home and both eating and it was on time.
Yeah, it just happened to work out.
Yeah, it happened to work out. That show's gotten really funny. At least for me it has. Like I've been really enjoying it lately.
I haven't seen that at all. I've seen some commercials and clips
Yeah.
online, but
Like Kermit to me is like one of the non-funny ones. Like he's kind of a straight man.
yeah, I think he's
But
sort of designed that way.
he had an episode where he almost had a nervous breakdown and Scooter had to take over. And I just thought it was hilarious. He went 'cause he went to one of those yoga places, like a retreat to try to calm him down. And Jason Bateman was there and he was making it worse.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, I like Jason Bateman. He makes me laugh.
Yeah, did do watch Arrested Development. He was good on that.
Yeah. That's the one show I didn't watch.
He's if you like Jason Bateman, it's a good show to watch.
But I like him in his movies, like Horrible Bosses and Extract and all kinds of stuff that he's in. He was in like the Spelling Bee one that was really weird. I don't know if you saw it, but it was like where he went up against kids, like children, and he found a loophole in there that would not preclude him from competing against these children. So he'd go to these spelling bees and actually win, and they couldn't kick him out because of the verbiage in the sign up. Because I guess he never graduated high school or something weird like that. And he was competing against like 8-year-olds.
I don't think I have.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Nice. Cool. Yeah, it's been a while. I think it's been about the month since we recorded last.
Yeah, it's been maybe a little over a month.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was trying to figure that out, but like even DC Noise, I think it was longer than that. Well, not no, it wasn't. It was long for me, Keith, and Daryl not to record an episode, but me, Keith, and Campbell had recorded something.
Yeah,
So.
that's right. Yes. I have no idea what episode this is. 60 something, I think. And it's mostly going to be comics, right? Because we didn't really.
Yeah, I don't think you watched that other movie, so
What one's
Zap
that?
Zap Zapped,
Oh, the.
the Scott Baio thing. I don't even know
Yeah.
if it's available anymore,
I forgot
but
about it. We could still do
I
it
did
sometime.
watch it. I did
Did
watch
you?
it. Yeah, but I watched it a long time ago, and I
Yeah.
watched it again recently a long time ago. It was for the last episode because I thought we were gonna do it. Well, what happened last time? We were gonna do an episode and then we had to push off a week, and then Halloween was there, so we decided to do it like a Halloween theme movie.
Yeah.
And I had watched it like 2 weekends prior to that because I was
Oh,
on the
okay.
elliptical. And I sometimes when Barb's not around, I was like, I'll watch this, even though I don't think she would have minded it because I was watching like most of the stuff she doesn't mind. I was watching Human Centipede 3 and she hated it. She had to leave the
She?
room.
Yeah, that's more of a gross out horror.
Oh, it's horrible. It's so bad that I like it. I don't know why I like it. It's just that actor's so over the top. He's like, in this one, the thing that's crazy about the Human Centipede movies is every other movie builds on the previous one. So like in Human Centipede 2, it's this serial killer that's watching Human Centipede 1 that wants to make it a reality.
Oh, okay.
Well, in Human Centipede 3, they took the crazy ass doctor in 1 and the crazy ass motherfucker in 2, and they made them the major characters in a prison, a high penitentiary prison for the third one. And they had the first two movies. So
Okay.
it's like fucked up. It really is.
I've never seen any of them.
I don't
I
think you would like them. I don't know what it is. It's like it's so fucking crazy, kind of like Crossed. It's so crazy
Right.
that you think, is this legal? Can you show it? And each one gets worse. Like it's not just
The
shock,
top
it's
one.
not just shock value, it's content
Yeah.
and concept of thinking. It's like how could they outdo themselves? It's like reading Crossed. You like
Yeah.
read Crossed and say, this is the most vile thing I've ever seen, and then it rotates writers and you see something else and you're like, oh my God, I didn't think it could get worse than that, and it just keeps on going. That's like that. But it was entertaining, but she hates the actor that's in the first one. Like she hates his voice because he's so fucking over the top. But I think he's like a brilliant actor because he makes his character so fucking outrageous, which is what they need for a film like this
Oh, yeah.
to make it what it is. Like if they put like some bad actor there, I don't think it would be as good. But she hates that actor, like she hates it.
Yeah, I remember when the first one came out. I pretty much know everything happens because I used to listen to a lot of movie podcasts, and the one I
Yeah.
was listening to talked through that whole movie pretty much. But and I'm aware that they came out with sequels, but I've never actually seen it.
Yeah, in the sequel, it's turning into like a millipede. And it's when it's a whole prison.
Oh, right, yeah.
And it had some big actors. Like, there was some guy that you see a lot in the movies. I don't know what his name was. And then it had Julia Roberts' brother. What's his name?
Oh,
Eric
Eric
Roberts.
Roberts,
Yeah.
yeah.
He was in it. He played like this senator. And yeah, it was insane. It was really crazy.
That's like his career now, is showing up in B movies and crappy movies.
Yeah. He even purposely like knows to act different though.
Yeah, he hams it
It's
up and
like he knows that he's what movies he's in, 'cause
yeah.
he's not a bad actor and he could act in a serious good movie. Then he knows he needs to what he needs to do if the film is like this.
Right.
He needs to
Yeah.
take it down a couple notches. Yeah.
I had a pet switch. I have the cat now.
Oh yeah. Tag team.
Yeah, Carrie came and got Mabel because Dusty was on her bed and she gets in a mood where she wants to play and she starts bugging him, trying to play with him, and he doesn't speak the same language.
Yeah.
But they've been getting along pretty good. It was cracking me up the one day they were both on the couch together and they were both really sleepy.
Yeah.
So it was real peaceful, and she ended up kind of using him as a pillow, basically. She fell asleep with her head on top of him, and she was just snoring away, and he was so tired he didn't give a shit, and just it was pretty funny. But so yeah, we got some comic talk. I know you've been reading a lot of stuff. I'm not sure what you're going to talk
Yeah.
about, but I know you've read a lot of stuff that qualifies as far as
Well,
time theory.
actually, last week when I was going nuts, there was only one book that qualified. Everything was like 1 year delta. Do you know what I mean? I read a
I knew you were in
lot.
the ballpark at
I
least.
read, yeah, I was off 1 year, and I'm not going to talk about them too much, but I read a lot of JLA Classified, which kind of finished one of the stories that you caught me on. Hey, that's not 10 years. I finished the Gail Simone and Garcia Lopez story, which was really good because it was the Justice League fighting this general that had stole like Starro and Amazo technology, and he was a real threat, and they couldn't really touch him because of the United Nations and shit, and all the rules. And he ended up fucking him pretty bad, and actually developing a super team of his own in China, and they had like people that could hold their own against the Justice League, but it was really good. And then the JSA Classified, which is the same sort of thing. I read a Bane story where he was like getting in with Rex and I can't remember the other guy's the second Iron Man's his son. The first Iron Man's name is Rex Taylor or Tyler, and he had pharmaceutical company and he made the Hour Man pills,
Yeah.
Morocco or Mara, I can't remember what it's called.
Miraclo, I think.
Morocco. I don't know how to pronounce it, but he made that pill, and then his son became a drug addict, kind of like an Infinity Inc. and all that stuff. But then he eventually came out of it and became Our Man. And they had this weird thing with Bane, where Bane was trying to get him to give him pills and stuff because he come off the Venom and stuff. It was a really interesting story. And then I started reading a Dr. Midnight story, which was really cool, which it was about an organ, a guy who stole organs, like livers and kidneys and hearts and eyes, and but he only stole them from Metas, and he was like attacking like really obscure characters, like characters from like Power Company. Like you have to be well versed in DC to know some of these characters, like Power Company and a lot of the Bloodlines characters. He was like stealing parts, like eyeballs and all kinds of shit. And they picked on Loose Cannon and I got man Argus, Argus. He was a character that's actually an organization now in the New 52. Actually, pre-52, it was an organization. Like if you read Suicide Squad number 1 by Jon Ostrander, they talk about it. But it was also a character, And they picked a lot of those characters, and they stole organs, and Dr. Midnight had to solve them. And then I read the second, this is the only one that qualified, the Dark Knight Returns sequel, The Dark Knight Strikes, I believe it's called, or you could call it Dark Knight 2.
All right.
And I read the second volume, and man, I really think it's good. Like Derek Coward posted, he says, yeah, it was good up until you read three, and then Frank Miller goes batshit crazy. But I haven't read that one yet, so up until this point, I really enjoyed it. And I wanted to read it before we got into Dark Knight Master Race, even though Frank Miller's not too involved with it, other than giving his blessing. You know, that's about it. And knowing the beginning, middle, and end, so he can write a Dark Knight 4. You know what I really wish he would do is finish the damn story with Jim Lee, because I loved All-Star Batman. I thought it was fantastic. But yeah, I read a lot, and then some Justice League Detroit, but it was because I thought we might record, but then I was like, we're not, so I'm going to go into the same box. And I knew I was over a year because most everything in that box is like borderline. Like half of it is qualifies and half doesn't. But
Yeah. Right around the borderline.
whatever I read, I really enjoyed. Like I was really into.
That's cool.
But I'll let you start off since I talked a little bit.
Okay. Well, I thought I'd get back to Grimjack because I've talked about pretty much everything that I've read in that series so far, and I had gotten up to the actual launch of the title because it was a backup for a while. So I'd actually gotten up to Grimjack number one, which all of these so far have been in the Grimjack Omnibus Volume One.
Yeah, they're Star Slayer, right?
It had been a backup in Star Slayer.
Which I was reading recently.
Yeah.
At least the remastered editions, and they were so damn good.
But yeah, IDW put out two volumes, two omnibi to collect the original Grimjack. This volume one that I've been talking about has the backups from Star Slayer 10 through 17, and then has issues 1 through 13 of the Grimjack ongoing. So this story starts off in Mundan's Bar, the place that Grimjack owns. It's kind of a Mos Eisley kind of place where crooks and criminals and stuff like that hang out.
Is it on land or is it in a spaceport? Do you know?
It's on land, it's in that city that is the net sort of a nexus of a whole bunch of different dimensions.
Yeah.
And this woman walks in that obviously doesn't belong there. She's a little bit older, but she definitely looks like she's got money and she's a very attractive older woman. And so immediately some of the guys in the club start hitting on her, giving her a hard time, and Grimjack puts a stop to it. And she's there because she's there to see him and is interested in hiring him for a job. She's aware of his reputation and whatnot. And he's willing to take on the job, but she protests when she gives him the idea. When he gives her the idea that he's going to just take on the job like a detective normally would, and just put in reports to her and let her know what he finds out, she wants to come along and be there so it's not up to him what he's going to tell her and what he might leave out. And the reason she wants to hire him is relates to a scene that opens the issue. That's the first few pages where a young girl, well, like younger than her, but like maybe a woman in her 20s or so, she's writing a diary, and then she jumps out of a it's like fifth or sixth story window. And apparently this is the daughter of this woman that comes in to Munden's bar to hire him. And when she went in to her daughter's room to collect her things, she found a ghost of her daughter who was sort of stuck in this loop where she was writing in her diary, as we saw, basically kind of repeating the actions we saw at the beginning of the issue, where she's writing in her diary and then goes to jump out the window. But it's occurring in a loop where once she jumps, she reappears back at the desk writing in her diary. So, because of that, her mother wants to find this diary. There's only the ghost version, the vision in the vision. The actual diary is not there, and she assumes that she's going to find out what happened to her daughter if she finds this diary and what her daughter wrote in it. The other little wrinkle is that the girl's father, this woman's husband, her first husband, basically, they had divorced a long time ago, fairly amicably as far as divorces go, and the girl's father, this guy, is the finance minister of the city. Sinister is the name of this city, this Nexus kind of place. So from there, they go on the investigation. The woman accompanies Grimjack. They go talk to this guy who's kind of a musclehead. And it's sort of interesting because he's at this university, in the University of Sinister, and the university is interesting because it's a pursuit of excellence. It's not about ethics, or there's no beating around the bush in terms of what the purpose of this university is. It's to excel and be the best that you can be at what you are. It's, there's no beating around the bush about truth or beauty or anything like that. And so the athletes there don't have to have any sort of other major. They focus on their sport, and the guy that they're looking for is associated with the daughter, and he pretends not to know her. And eventually, him and Grimjack has to get physical with the guy. He's like, "Okay, punk, you're about to wear your ass for a hat," and they punches him in the crotch. But he fights dirty purposely, knowing that this guy's quite a he's like a weightlifter and stuff. So they get information from him that there's some kind of connection with drugs. And so, like a lot of the Grimjack stories, one of the things that makes it appealing is the imagination that Ostrander and Truman put into it. Especially with this world of Sinister, they next go to the father of the father's house, and he's got this interesting servant who is named Krupp, and he's sort of like a bird man that's real tall. But his current wife is this being called an Ether, Ethayr, and she's from this race of exquisitely beautiful, ethereal beings that they exist in more than one reality at a time. And she's the one that kind of gives them some clues about the direction to take. And it ends up being kind of a conspiracy that involves the finance minister's servant. And they have to go to talk to a drug dealer. And part of the theme of the issue is the mother finding out things about her daughter that she didn't necessarily want to know, but that was what Grimjack warned her about in the first place, that if she walks down this trail, she's probably going to get the answers that she wants, but she might not be happy about the answers. And without giving everything away, that's kind of directions that things go. And along the way, Grimjack has to kind of deal with the fact that he's not a young guy anymore. So they make that point by him not quite doing his reflex not being quite as fast as they used to be, and he takes a little bit more injuries than he might in the past because they run afoul of these drug dealers that the daughter was involved with. But what there's an interesting sort of twist though that you think that it's just all about muckraking the daughter and finding out bad stuff that she was involved in, and it turns out that her purposes and the reason that her ghost is still present on the earth is not just for her own sake, but that stuff that she wrote in the diary implicate her father. So she's not at peace because she's worried about the diary not being in safe hands and stuff. So it's an interesting story, and the way that it's a one and done kind of neat little story with different characters that are believable. So yeah, I'm
So is
continuing to
that
enjoy this.
that was number one, and
Yeah.
did it start like a number one, or did it kind of just like assume that you had read all the backups before it?
Sort of in the middle of the road there. It doesn't go out of its way to explain things, but it presents stuff in a way that you can kind of infer.
Kind of like any comic did in the Silver and Bronze Age then.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't spell out a lot, edit a lot, and a lot of exposition, but it also, because it's a one and done, because it introduces this new plot line with the mother and the daughter in that family. It's not, you don't have to know anything about those characters from the past, and you know enough about Grimjack from the story that you can get the deal of what he's about. But if you've been reading all along, it's interesting for the long-term reader in that you get to see some new aspects of the city that haven't been introduced before with the, we really haven't gotten into what life is like in the city. There hasn't been any other officials or politicians or anything introduced before. We've never seen the university before. So these are kind of the first hints that you get that there is a about the daily life and the composition of the city beyond the fact that it's this place where you can connect to other realities and stuff, and that's where Grimjack and his bar is at. So, yeah, I mean, I think you could definitely just jump in here, and get a sense of what's going on. You know enough, I think, to enjoy the issue at least.
Yeah.
So.
My book is it's gonna focus on one character in different time periods, but I've been on this Aquaman kick lately,
All right.
and most of the stuff prior to 1973. So like I always said, well, I'm gonna collect everything Aquaman, and I've for the most part completed most of it. Every Aquaman volume since 1973, and that includes Adventure Comics where he was appearing. But I actually acquired Aquaman number one, Aquaman number two, Aquaman number seven, and I got so close that I just want to finish it. Even the marriage between Aquaman and Mera, and the first appearance of Aquagirl, and I like went on a binge buying of Aquaman, and including Showcase number 30. Showcase number 33. I think I only need like two more showcases. And along that, I've told you in the past that a lot of times I missed issues, and they were like annuals because I never thought they were part of the story, or there was something different and I didn't care. Or Aquaman 1 Million, and I actually picked up Aquaman 1 Million, which is by Dan Abnett and Lanning with penciler. I think his name is Tom Grinberg. The art was really good. I really liked his art. But in the 1 Millions, as they like switch places, like the Justice League of the 1 Million allow them to go to the future, and they go into the past. They kind of like switch places, and Aquaman gets to see what, man, what was it, Neptune? Yeah, it was Neptune, the planet Neptune, which is almost like encompassed by water, like in this particular area. And all the people of Neptune worship Aquaman. So it's like he's coming to see how he's treated like a god, essentially. And he's swapping places with the other Aquaman, who's not really treated as a god. He knows he's a legacy of this Aquaman. So he comes into a situation where he's worshipped and people are, you know, adoring him, and he has this person that takes him around the city and shows him everything, and that person is Tempest. And if you know who Tempest is, it's Garth, Aqualad, really. But in this world, in this year, the 853rd century, it's a female, and you know, she shows him around along with this like robotic fish. It's weird. And all of a sudden something happens, like this mental thing is unleashed, and he's like demoing his powers, and like everybody's amazed because the Aquaman in this time, he can't talk to animals or any of that stuff. So when Aquaman was demonstrating his powers, that's what he did. He went into the ocean and talked to all the animals and had them do this various thing, and like all these people were in awe, you know, that worshipped him. And then he somehow unleashes like this Leviathan, like from underneath the ground. It's huge, and he can't control it. It's got like a rage to it where he can't control it. Nobody can control it. It's a Kraken, and this Kraken was supposedly taken from another planet and brought to this planet, and whatever their biology makeup is, it's not like home to this Leviathan. It's like torture, and it causes the Kraken to start destroying stuff all around, killing people and everything. And everybody starts blaming Aquaman, including Tempest, and Tempest attacks Aquaman. But eventually he's able to use his telepathic abilities and control the Leviathan. And then take control, and everybody forgives him and realizes, you know, we're sorry, you know, King, for accusing you. And they actually ship the Leviathan or the Kraken back to his planet, and where he should be on his home world. And the fact that he was away from his home world caused it to freak out and not even be able to adjust to the different climate or water or whatever. And now, at the end of this issue, it's like every monthly title at this time had a 1 millionth issue, and it like wraps up in DC 1 million. And the next issue, he's supposed to join the Justice League of America on the headquarters on Jupiter, and that's how it ends. So yeah, it was a really good story. I liked it. I like the art too. It was really cool. And this is the Aquaman with the hook, you know, and the beard. It's that
Yeah.
Aquaman, the Grant Morrison, Peter David. You know, Grant Morrison used him in the Justice League, and Peter David kind of took off his hand and created this Aquaman because the 90s were real angsty, so Aquaman had to be too.
Right. Yeah, everybody kind of got filtered through that
Yeah.
view at that time.
But it was a really good issue. I enjoyed it, and made me want to read more Aquaman, so that's what I'll be talking about rest of the
Nice.
episode.
Cool. Well, I went back into some Silver Age Marvel, and I wanted to talk about some more Fantastic Four, specifically issues 25 and 26, because I thought it was interesting contrast with the Marvel of today. We really see the Marvel universe is pretty small, it's still kind of taking shape, you know? And there was a small amount of books and a small amount of characters. And so it was pretty easy, especially since one person was writing a lot of it, that to keep everything sort of straight as far as continuity and what characters were doing what at what given time, like everything was kind of lined up. And the Marvel Universe was more like a smaller publisher, like you might have with something like Valiant today, where everything is kind of like there's a small, you could kind of follow everything that was going on. And, you know, 25, issue 25, it was already treated like a milestone. And so they wanted to, you could tell they wanted to do something big for the issue. And, you know, this being their, not their longest running title, but the longest of the superhero books. You know, you had a lot of the monster anthology titles that had been taken over by superheroes like Iron Man, Captain America, and Thor and stuff with Journey into Mystery, etc. But those switchovers all happened after Fantastic Four number one. And so Fantastic Four getting to 25 is kind of the first milestone of these interconnected superhero books. So you have the Hulk versus the Thing, which this is not the first time that they've met up, but you know, these two characters going after each other as the two big kind of strong characters, the Marvel Universe is will be a long-term thing. And this is pretty new at the time. I think maybe it's only the second time that they've gone up against each other. And the Hulk, actually, right at this time, doesn't have his own book. You know, he had the first six issues or so of the Hulk, and then that got canceled. But he's been pretty present.
Didn't he have Tales from Astonish though? At this time? Where he was a.
I don't think so. I think he pretty much. He kept appearing though, in Avengers, and in other places, but I don't think he had his own feature. It was only for a small stretch of time where he didn't, but I could be wrong. But I think right now, I don't think he has his own feature right now. And they're still kind of—I mean, he's green, but they're still sort of figuring out the formula. That's going to work for him. He's not changing due to Banner's anger yet. It's still sort of kind of random. He comes into the Fantastic Four book from the Avengers. The last time he was seen, was in Avengers number three. And actually in the beginning of the issue, Sue Storm is reading a newspaper that has an article about the Avengers returning to the US after fighting overseas, and that they're on the lookout for the Hulk, and Captain America's joined the Avengers at this point also. So the Avengers basically kind of pursue Hulk into this issue of the Fantastic Four. And as they're pursuing the Hulk, the members of the Fantastic Four are having different issues. Reed comes down with a fever, so that it's this weird virus. So he's kind of out of commission for the rest of the issue. But the Hulk shows up in the city, so the rest of the Fantastic Four, starting with Johnny, head out, and Johnny gets taken out pretty quickly too. And but the Hulk is still, in addition to not being turned by anger, he doesn't have maybe the intellect of Banner when he's the Hulk, but he's definitely not the he's definitely smarter than the Hulk would later be. When he goes up against the Human Torch and the Human Torch gets knocked out and flames off, he says, he's just a kid, not worth wasting time on. I've got to find the Avengers. They're the ones I want. So he definitely has rationality and definitely has a stronger intellect than the Hulk would later have. But so the Thing ends up going out to face him and to help Johnny out. And actually Sue goes along too, because they're reassured that that Mr. Fantastic is stable. But Johnny gets taken out again, and Sue really kind of, at this time she's not all that powerful, and Stan didn't really do a whole lot with the Invisible Woman. So she's pretty ineffective, and basically they're clearing the table so that the Hulk and the Thing can go up against each other, and they can have a, a knockdown, drag out fight. And that's basically what happens for the second half of the issue. The Thing is usually posited as the slightly less physically strong of the two, and usually ends up having to use some kind of other advantage.
Like his brains, he's a little more cognizant of what he's doing.
Right. He's always the Thing. He's not affected
Yeah.
by transformation. So, you can see that that's established pretty early on, because in this issue, that's what he does. He ends up tricking the, at least to put a temporary stop to their fight, he tricks the Hulk into grabbing a fistful of live electric wires. And that puts a temporary stop to the Thing, but the fight does continue. It gets pushed out into the river. The Thing eventually puts another temporary stop to him by wrapping some steel cables around him, ripped off of the bridge. Meanwhile, while this is going on, Reed is struggling to get out of bed and trying to help. He sees what's going on in the television stuff, but he's really too sick to do that. And the doctor comes and sees him, gives him a sedative so that he'll stop trying to get out of bed and making himself work worse. And the issue ends in a cliffhanger, which was really, it shows you that this is a big story, because at the time that was pretty rare for a story to continue on to a next issue. If they did that, that showed you that it was a big deal. Where the Hulk is calling out the Avengers, and the National Guard is mobilizing with a bunch of big guns and stuff. It's to be continued, and the Avengers are featured really kind of briefly in this issue, but then issue 26, they're featured on the cover. It says the Avengers take over real big, and conclusion of the battle between the Thing and the Hulk. And this is where we really feel, the Avengers are a lot more prominent in this issue, and this is where you really feel like, if you're reading Marvel at the time and you really want to know what's going on, pick up all their titles and follow all their books, because these stories are all interconnected, and you get a little recap to tell you that the rest of the Fantastic Four are out of commission, and it's kind of up to the Thing. And it's kind of a desperate situation. The Avengers really kind of do need to show up. And for the first 7 or 8 pages, the Thing is just kind of trying to hold his own, to keep the Hulk occupied. And the Hulk eventually gets away, but he goes through the subway system and then finds his way to the Avengers Mansion. And they end up, Avengers and the Hulk battle it out within the mansion. One of many times that the mansion starts getting busted up. And but while this is going on, the rest of the Fantastic Four are regrouping. Reed's starting to feel a little bit better. They basically get together as the four of them together again for the first time, and start heading over to Avengers Manor, where Captain America, this is still pretty early on. You haven't gotten that many chances in the Silver Age to see the Captain America in action. It's only like maybe the second or third time, so it's pretty neat to see him fighting it, fighting against the Hulk. The Hulk saying to him, "Try to lecture me, will you? Hey, how can you move so fast?" And Cap says, "Clean living does it, sonny." It's real kind of new to the 20th century, not to the 20th century, but new to the 70s Captain America there, talking like it's still his era. But yeah, I mean, a lot of the issue is a fight.
Hulk said that's how do you move so fast?
Yeah, he said that to Captain America.
That's a pretty cognizant thing to say.
Yeah, like I said, he's definitely very, he's very,
You should have said like, why man move so fast?
he doesn't talk like that at all yet. So it's interesting really to see in the Silver Age the development of the Hulk. I mean, a lot of these characters, they come out pretty fully formed. Like most of the Avengers and the Fantastic Four, Spider-Man, like they got their concepts down like right away. And the Hulk, it was really not like that. I mean, he started out a different color. He changed.
The color though was a technicality, like it was
True.
because of ink.
Yeah, that's true. But even so, with just the concept of like how is he going to change, like what's going to cause him to change, what does he act like when he is the Hulk, like all of that stuff, like kind of it took him a little while to pin down the concept that
But
worked.
even when they pinned it down, though, it changed and morphed into all kinds of different versions.
Yeah, I mean in that but
Because you
it
have Mr. Fix-It, you have when
sure.
he was bulked up Hulk and he was cognizant, had the mind of Bruce. And then you have Monster Hulk who just wants to destroy and get bigger and anger, and
Yeah.
that's the one I prefer. I like when he's human and like incredibly smart and loses control and turns into a monster that's barely mindless. I mean, he's just massive destruction, but that manages not to kill anybody.
Yeah, and that's my point is that's the classic Hulk concept, and yeah, they do go and change things later on, but those are not, that's not them trying to figure out what is the core Hulk concept. That's them riffing on like, okay, we've had the Hulk, we got to change things up because this is a serialized medium, but they have to like
We
establish
have to keep interest, yeah.
yeah, I mean, before you can do variations on the theme, you got to figure out what the core theme is. And with a lot of the other characters, like I mean, they've done that with most characters. Like, you've had Spider-Man, different versions of him and stuff, but you have your core concept, which they pretty much figured out right away for the most part. And they did that with a lot of these characters in the Marvel Silver Age, but the Hulk, it took them a little while to get to that core concept. But anyways, eventually, the Avengers and the Fantastic Four team up, and it takes the two teams together, combined, working together to finally get the best of the Hulk. They really kind of get that across to you that the Hulk is so powerful and such like a destructive force that the two teams have to work together to take him down. And the funny thing is that it's actually Rick Jones, who's been, initially started hanging out with the Hulk, but he's since transferred over to hanging out with the Avengers since the Hulk has been on the run. And what actually finally puts an end to things is that Rick Jones gets close enough to the Hulk that he throws a gamma ray treated capsule in his mouth that he has because Banner gave him it. And then he watches as the Hulk kind of stumbles. I mean, he's able to do that because he's been beat on for quite a while now, and he's sort of reeling. But he watches as the Hulk jumps into the Hudson River, and it looks like he just kind of he goes under as the Hulk, and they're talking about, we should follow him, but since it's not clear who's saying what because it's all off panel, but someone makes the point that he's got the strongest lungs on Earth and he could stay underwater for hours. There's no point. But we see in the panel, even though the heroes don't see that he comes up for air as Bruce Banner, so the capsule worked. But in the end, all they do are able to do is put an end to the rampage that the Hulk was on. And then the last page is just kind of like a wrap up, the two teams talking to each other, and Cap's talking to Rick about how it's tough to lose a partner. He said, "Oh yeah, you." The thing says, "Hey, that's right. You used to have a sidekick named Bucky, didn't you?" And the Thor tells them, "Yeah, that's why Captain America's taking Rick under his wing because he reminds him of his own lost partner." And they just talk about how it's too bad the Hulk can't understand that they're not enemies and that they can't talk to him. The last word bubble is kind of funny. It's Johnny says, "Know something, Benjamin? After tangling with the Hulk, I suddenly realize how cute and lovable you really are." So, I like seeing these. I like every once in a while dipping back into these early Marvel stories. I had read X-Men and early Spider-Man, but I think you see actually a little bit more of the Marvel universe coming together in Fantastic Four and in the Avengers because they're team books, and you had already started spinning off some of, the Avengers came together after all these characters had started out in other books, not for very long. They weren't around all that long before they put together the Avengers, but it was unlike the Fantastic Four who were introduced as a group. You did have these characters show up first individually, and then they put them together as like a super team, kind of. So,
I mean,
that's
it
pretty neat.
wasn't long before, right after these issues came out, that Hulk jumped over to Tales from Astonish.
Okay.
Yeah, so he like had he had the Hulk, and it was, I don't know why they stopped it. Like, it was one through five or
I don't think the
six.
sales were that good, really, actually.
Yeah, so
But
they put him in other books like this FF, and I guess they had a plan for him. And then he went to Tales from Astonish and kind of like fought Giant Man, who was appearing there. And then he started to have his own feature alongside, that character. And then he came back to his own book. So he must have like lost popularity or had a what was weak at the time, I guess, like for a Marvel book, like a weak launch. Or maybe people didn't want monsters and he was coming across as a monster, and they kind of revamped him a little bit before he could get to his own book. But it's unusual for them to cancel stuff like that, and it's
Was, yeah.
usually you have like Thor coming from Journey to Mystery and like Hulk coming from Tales to Astonish, but he started with his own number one, and then whatever it was, they dropped it.
Yeah, and it's interesting how they do. They did pretty much. They showed a commitment to the character. They kept kind of playing with him as a concept, and they used him in Avengers to bring that team together, and in the storyline, and they just kept kind of working with the character and kind of playing around with it till they got him right. And they showed definitely a commitment to using the character. So, that he doesn't. even though his book was canceled, he definitely doesn't disappear from the books. And he
Yeah.
kind of, he pretty much sticks around, like you said, until he gets his own title again. And
I think it was
that
like
time it worked
four or
out.
5 months later from that book that he was in Tales from Astonish, So it wasn't long. It was a matter of months.
Yeah, he kept popping up. So.
The next book I am going to talk about is Aquaman number 2, annual from 1996. And this was the Legends of the Dead Earth, which I didn't buy any of these. I might have one or two, but I never read them. They had an Action Comics annual, an Adventures of Superman annual, Aquaman annual, Azrael, Batman, Batman Shadow of the Bat, Catwoman, Detective, Flash, Green Lantern, Guy Gardner, Impulse, Justice League of America, Batman Legends of the Dark Knight, Legion of Superheroes, Legionnaires, Power of Shazam. I know I have that one because I just completed the run. Robin, Sovereign Seven, which I haven't read much of those guys. Starman,
I always see those in
Superboy,
quarter bins.
yeah.
Sovereign Seven.
Sovereign Seven and Power Company. Supergirl, Superman, Superman, Man of Steel, and Wonder Woman. And what this concept was, which is right in my wheelhouse, especially in nowadays, is post-apocalyptic Earth. So taking our heroes and moving them into post-apocalyptic Earth. And this one focuses on Aquaman, and it was written by Peter David with the art by Ed Harrigan. And I remember Ed from Green Arrow. He did a lot of Green Arrow stuff. And Peter David obviously had like a long, long, long run on Aquaman. And this Aquaman was awesome story because it opens up like in this future where these two guys are walking and they walk into each other on this weird like crossover, and neither one of the walkers wants to get out of each other's way. And instead they say, "Well, I'll tell you a story, and if my story is better than your story, then I'll get out of your way." So each walker tells their stories, and they're both about Aquaman. The first walker tells them about a king, of Atlantis, and the earth dried up on this dead earth, and people would have to travel miles and miles and miles to get to this little part of Atlantis where they would go see Aquaman and ask for water, and he would grant them that, but he would do it on top of a throne, and he would be looking down upon them, and he would give them water, so he would like grant them what they asked for, but at the same time they didn't like him. So he decides in his why do people look down upon me? Why are these cities over there I've never visited the city of Phoenix ever, and I give them water all the time. Well, I'm going to go visit the city of Phoenix. And he takes a bunch of water pouches and travels this dead earth to get to the city of Phoenix. The first person he runs into is this prostitute. And she's like, "Hey, if you come in here, I'll give you what you want. All I'll take is this pouch of water, and you won't regret it." Well, she ends up undressing. He gives her the pouch of water, and she talks about, like, while she's there with him, ready to have sex, she just starts slamming Aquaman or King Arthur. She's like, "This guy's an asshole. He gives us water, but he looks down upon any one of us, whereas I'm a human being just like him, and I should be treated better than he treats me." So he gives her water but leaves without having sex with her, and takes off and goes into a bar where he meets other people, and they're having a good time in the bar. They're drinking. They talk about the water that they have there. It's like, Arthur drinks some, and it's like horrible water. He said, "This is like really bad water." And but they toast. They're toasting things, and he decides to toast himself. Right? He says, "How about to King Aquaman or Arthur?" And they're like, "You motherfucker! Why would you toast that asshole in our bar?" And he causes a ruckus, and he has this sword of Atlantis thing where he could it could freeze people or burn people, and this one guy attacks him, ready to kill him for making this suggestion, and Arthur puts him in his place, and the other people start attacking him, so they join in, and they find out he is King Arthur, and they all attack him. But then he ends up going back to his place, and he's like depressed, man. These motherfuckers that I'm giving water to, they really hate me. They hate me. And he secludes himself in his kingdom for weeks before the two people that attacked him, the prostitute and the guy that attacked him at the bar, they show up at his doorstep, and they're like begging to speak to King Arthur, and he's like, okay, I'll listen to you. And they're on their knees, and they said, "We plead that you do not hurt the city of Phoenix because of what we did. We know we did wrong. They need water. You can kill us, but please don't kill our people." So they were real selfless, and they were like sacrificing themselves to King Arthur. And he actually spared them and gave them unlimited water, and that's how that story ended. But the tide turning happened in the city as he was leaving, where people were just attacking him or feared him in the streets. And this little boy comes up to him, and the parents are like, "Oh shit, get our kid." It's like one of those things where your kid actually does something because he has kids have this innocence about them, and he goes up to him. And the parents are like, "Oh, he's gonna kill our son. He's gonna kill our son. Fuck!" But what he does is he squeezes a bunch of water into this red bandana, and he gives it to Arthur. And it's like this selfless act that like changed the tide of how Arthur looked at these people. So that was a really cool story. So I was like, "Man, that's a good story." And if there was a winner, I would have to choose that story. But in the second story, it's told from a different perspective. It's like Arthur is put on this pedestal with his Atlanteans in this like floating skull, which is really weird. It's like right above the ocean. The whole world in this Dead Earth story, the whole world is ocean. So the other one was it was all desert, and this one's all ocean. And he's above everybody else in this like rock of eternity skull, where he sits there with his son, Koryak, and he rules over this the kingdoms, and this one place decides to attack it, and they fail miserably. So these two mercenaries come to him, and they say, "You want us to take this guy down so we can be able to travel?" You know, like they couldn't even travel on the water without being attacked. And they said, "You want us to take him down?" Well, it turns out to be Arthur's brother, Ocean Master, and Black Manta. So they team up to take down this skull place where Arthur sits. And it was a really good story as well. Like, I really enjoyed it. I'm glad they kept both stories contained. So they like blew that up. And as soon as they blew that up, the two brothers fought for eternity in the stars. And these two guys that were saying, "Get out of my path, get out of my path," deemed their stories equal, so they just stayed there, like for eternity, looking at each other. But it was an awesome story. It was a cool concept, you know?
Yeah.
Two wanderers that decide to do battle over stories instead of physical battle.
Yeah. Interesting idea.
Yeah. It was a cool story. I liked it.
I have a few 1 million tie-ins, but I haven't read any of them. I don't think. I know I want to read the Flash one at some point around, read the actual event at the same time or something.
Yeah.
So I picked that up, and I've got a few others here and there that, just because I wanted to complete the run. I think there was a Starman one, right? Well, wasn't it around the same time that
Legends of the Dead Earth or 1,000?
the 1 millions.
1,000,000?
I think there's a Starman
There
one.
was a Starman one. It
Yeah.
was all spawned off by. Do you remember the Hourman that was the android?
Yeah,
Yeah, so he played a big part of this.
that's right. He was connected to that. And there's
And
like a
he actually
Kronos
had it.
one.
Yeah, he actually had his own, what do you call it? Arc or title
Yeah,
for
it
a
was like
while.
20 something issues or something.
Yeah, he did have it. He Starman did have a 1 million.
Yeah.
Starman's been interesting because he's had so many incarnations. He had that Prince that was in Adventure Comics, you know?
Right.
And then he had this the Starman, the Will Payton Starman, and that had a pretty long run. And then they had the Blue Starman that they did in first issue comics. All of these Starmen played a part in James Robinson Starman,
Yeah.
who was the guy with the coat and the. And then you had Stargirl, who he ended up giving. Starman's interesting because that particular Starman, he owned the antique shop and whatever. He kind of retired. He kind of just said,
Yeah.
I wasn't meant to be this hero that my father was. Well, then, plus there's the Golden Age Starman that, you know, his legacy.
Yeah.
So that, man, there's been a lot of Starmen.
Which was true to the character and how he starts out. He
Yeah, very, very true to the character. He almost
didn't
like
want to in the
was
beginning.
pushed into being Starman because of the death of his brother.
Right.
Because his brother inherited the mantle and his brother got killed in action almost immediately. And then Starman had he Jack had to take over, and he ended up giving it to God, what's her name? Stars and Stripes. It was created by Geoff Johns. Stargirl is her name now, but it
Yeah,
used to be
Courtney
Stars and Stripes.
something.
Courtney, yeah,
Because I
he
know it's
ended up
named
giving
after
it
his
to her,
sister.
who she inherited the belt from what's his name? Star Spangled Kid.
Oh,
So,
right.
yeah, it was Star Spangled Kid and Stripesy. So that goes back to Golden Age too. I think that
Yes.
was Geoff Johns' first works was Stars and Stripes.
I believe so, yeah. Or yeah, this is definitely very early in his DC
Yeah, very
stuff.
early. And you could already see though what he was doing. Like Geoff Johns is so much into history of the characters, like legacies and stuff. He
Yeah.
like taps into that shit all the time, like legacies and histories, and even when he revamps stuff, he's aware of what he's revamping. Do you know what I mean? He's aware. He studies what came before. And one of the things that he did really wonders with was JSA, and it came from his first title, kind of, because Courtney, you know, was an inheritor of the legacy of Star Spangled Kid.
Right.
So, you know, and she actually had the stepfather of Stripesy. You know, it was Star Spangled Kid's sidekick, even though
Yeah.
he was. I always find him to be a unique sidekick because he's opposite, right? It
Yeah,
was
they flipped
kid. It
it.
was kid adult rather than adult kid.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, they flipped the concept.
Yeah.
Try to do something different.
Yeah. So yeah, that was a weird tangent, but our man did have a one, our star man did have a 1 million issue.
Yeah, and there were some weird ones. Like there was a Kronos 1 million.
Well, Kronos was an awesome series. If you get a chance to read that, like I wasn't even a like a time jumping fan, but this
Right.
Kronos was so damn interesting because he was like a borderline thief, like a time thief. But found himself to be like a hero, like of some sorts. You know, he was one of those gray area heroes. So he was interesting. And then he had that Vexed, which was that angel that was sent back down to Earth. There's a lot of cool DC properties that were created during that time. I like when they
Yeah.
do that, like Bloodhound and all that stuff. It's like they explore with stuff. And a lot of them. Some of those properties actually the writers maintained ownership, like Bloodhound and a couple others. They actually took to like Dark Horse later on and continued the series. So The Mighty is another one. The Mighty came out at DC, but yet the guy maintained ownership to his characters and he took it over to Dark Horse. So yeah, there's some cool shit.
Yep. Nice. What you got, Mabel? What you got? She came in, Kara gave her something. She's got some kind of
Treat.
treat, some kind of stick, some kind of beef stick or something. I don't
Yeah.
know what it is.
Well, I hope that's not the beef stick that gave Harley the shits.
No, she had, there was two bags of treats, and then there was a pig's ear.
Oh yeah, did she eat that?
No, not yet. I don't think she had it yet.
Harley loved that. Like she, I don't know what that had in it, but that was like her favorite thing. Like when she got one of those ears, she became obsessed with it. Like she ate it and then she was like wondering, "Okay, it's gone. Is there another one?" And then she like ran into the house, you know, after eating this pig's ear and started searching like on the cabinets and the tables, like, is there another one? I want it now. I want it now. She loved
Nice.
that thing. And it didn't last long. We made her eat it outside because some of those things will stain, you know.
Yeah, this whatever this is one of those ones that will keep her busy for a little while. Like she can gnaw on it for a while
Yeah.
and chew away at it, but she makes pretty good work of most stuff though.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, she came prancing into the room and settled down on her bed
Has
and
she changed at
chewing
all
away.
to you? Like her personality? Is she more comfortable now? Or like, or she's
Yeah.
got like that skittishness of being out in the streets?
She's definitely more comfortable. I mean, she took to us pretty well right away. I mean, that was part of the process, you know,
Yeah.
of the decision making. But she's gotten a lot better on the walk, on our walks and stuff. She's a lot more confident. You know, she doesn't f she's not as jumpy if we happen to encounter another person or something, and she doesn't bark at other dogs or anything. So, and she listens. You know, if she if I can tell if her hackles are up, and you know, she gets a little strip behind her neck of fur going up. She'll settle down if I say something to her, you know. So, yeah, she's definitely more comfortable, which is nice to see. She's a
Very
good
cool.
girl. Yeah. So I wanted to do a Star Trek update because I haven't talked about it in quite a while. Still watching the original series, maybe not quite as fast a pace as I was when I first started talking about it, but last time I brought it up, I was like maybe 2/3 of the way through season two. And I finished season two and started season three, which is the last season of the original series. So, I mean, I'll just highlight a few episodes. From the end of season two, there was, I want to mention the episode Patterns of Force, because one of the interesting things about this that I thought was, this is an episode where they come across a planet that has taken Nazism from Earth history. And what's interesting about this issue is because it depicts Nazi symbols and talks about Nazism and everything, it wasn't allowed on German television. You know, post World War II, in Germany, they banned any kind of depiction of Nazism from German television. So it wasn't until 1995 or 1996 that this episode actually aired on German television.
What's even interesting, though, I don't know if you ever look through previews, but when you like look at it, the detailed solicits, and you see like some weird Nazi cover, you'll see like this weird disclaimer sometimes that says "not available in Germany."
Yeah.
So it's just interesting that it's still prevalent, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and even when it was released in Germany, it wasn't on just regular television. I mean, it was shown on pay TV, whatever their equivalent of like cable or whatever. And you could finally get it subtitled in German on DVDs and stuff, but it wasn't until like 4 years ago that it was finally shown on a public television channel. But besides that, trivia, it's a pretty interesting episode. Let's see. What else? The Megaglory is an episode that is interesting because this episode, even though it wasn't filmed till the end of season two, was written a long time earlier. It was one of the scripts that they considered for the pilot, but then they didn't use it, and they ended up using it later on. And that deals with one of the themes that comes up a lot in Star Trek, where they talk about the Prime Directive. And in this episode, I think it's an interesting theme. It usually makes for pretty good episodes, and this is one that was written by the creator Gene Roddenberry, where it would have been interesting if they did go with this as the pilot and dealt with that issue right off the bat. But there's a different starship captain that has violated the Prime Directive and is helping one of the two tribes on this planet overcome the other. So they have to kind of deal with that and investigate the history on this planet, where there seems to have been a Cold War. So it's kind of also commenting on current events in the late 60s, which is something that Star Trek tended to do as well. In addition to Gene Roddenberry, one of the writers that wrote a lot of Star Trek scripts was DC Fontana, who as a female was kind of a pioneer in a lot of ways in like start in science fiction television. And she started out as Gene Roddenberry's secretary, but she went on to write a lot of the like really good scripts for the show. The episode that follows the Megaglory is called The Ultimate Computer, and this is kind of a neat look at that technology, because they come up with this M5 multitronic system, and the doctor who invented it is on the ship, and he's so confident in this computer. It kind of explores the idea of like, can we turn over all functions of the Enterprise to this computer, and things go wrong, of course. And it explores the idea of what humans have to offer, and what the differences between humans and computers are. It was a pretty interesting episode. So season two ends with an episode called Assignment Earth. And what's interesting about this is that it was actually a backdoor pilot, kind of like they still do today, where they had the Flash guest star on the Arrow, and that episode was kind of like was a backdoor pilot for the Flash television show. It's like a tryout kind of thing, and sometimes they end up going with the show, sometimes they don't. In this case, they didn't. But it was going to be called Assignment Earth, just like the episode. And so the Enterprise ends up going back in time to the 60s, and they connect to this character called Gary Seven, who's like a secret agent. They encounter him. He's traveling through time, or he's traveling through space at a time where that technology doesn't exist. So he's instantly very suspicious. But he's trying to connect with these agents that are undercover on Earth, trying to prevent this disaster. And Terry Garr is a pretty well-known actress. She's in the episode, and she would have been on the show if it had been picked up. And she is pretty young at the time, only in like her early 20s. So season two ends on a pretty good note. And what's interesting about season three is that the budget was cut pretty severely, and the show was moved to 10 p.m. on Friday nights. And as if to show the change, season three starts off with what a lot of people, including like William Shatner and other people involved with the show. Are you trying to bury your treat, huh? You don't want to eat no more, but you want to hide it? Just popped up on the couch next to me and started like acting like she was digging. What's that, huh? You don't want that anymore? You gonna finish it? Where are you gonna put it? Don't put it somewhere the cat can find it. Anyway, so yeah, Spock's brain is the first-ish episode of season three. And
Will the cat eat anything like that,
yeah, I don't know. He'll eat anything.
though?
He's obsessed with food. Like when he first came in here, I said I had a pet switch.
Yeah.
I had eaten some leftovers from last night real quick before we started podcasting, and I had the empty plate up on the bookshelf next to me, and he was immediately trying to figure out how to get up there and start licking the plate. So he's just obsessed with food. Such a weirdo. Like cats normally aren't like that. Like my parents' cat, they'd put his food out and he'd just nibble on it throughout the day. Whereas ours would just like about an hour before it's time to eat, he'll start meowing and bugging the shit out of us. And then he'll just eat every bit of it as fast as he possibly can and then start looking for more food. I don't know
Loves
what's
it.
up with him. I know he's very food motivated. So anyway, yeah, Spock's brain. I knew going into it that it was considered the worst episode, and it's pretty bad.
What's the title of that one?
Spock's brain.
Okay.
And yeah, this woman shows up on the ship mysteriously, and she steals Spock's brain, and just there's no like visual effect to depict that. It's just all of a sudden is. Brain is gone, and it's very like B movie, and most of the time not really in a good way. It's just a pretty bad script, and it's just really you can really see that their budget was cut, and Leonard Nimoy later said that he was really embarrassed during the entire episode, and Shatner said it was a kind of tribute to the executives who slashed the show's budget and put it in a bad time slot. But yeah, it's pretty bad, but it's interesting to watch. I mean, it's watchable. It's like fortunately, the next episode in the season, it's another one written by DC Fontana called The Enterprise Incident, is actually a lot better and a lot more interesting, where Kirk goes undercover as a Romulan, and they're basically it's dealing with like the Romulans have this new cloaking technology, and so it's dealing with how that technology affects the current political situation between the Romulans and the Enterprise and the Federation. So it kind of picks things up after a pretty bad start to the season. And from there, I've watched maybe, let's see, three, four, I think I'm on the sixth episode of season three, and none of them have been as bad as Spock's brain. I mean, they've been mostly pretty good. I mean, you could tell that the budget's a little lower because there's more episodes that they find a way just to kind of keep things on the Enterprise, so they don't have to pay for other
Props or
locations and
anything, yeah.
props and stuff. The latest one that I watched was Spectre of the Gun, which is one of those episodes where they end up in a weird situation that doesn't have to really do as much with science fiction. In this case, it's they end up in this trap where they're Captain Kirk and Chekhov and Nimoy and Spock, they all end up in a situation where they are supposed to reenact the Battle of OK Corral, and they're the Clantons, the ones that lose, and they're supposed to go up against, the Doc Holliday and Wyatt Earp and whatnot. It's funny because Chekhov, he's, the people that are there see them as the Clanton brothers, and Chekhov's like pretty into the whole situation because there's this woman that is just hanging all over him the whole time. I don't know, these episodes, I find them to be fun when they're put in these like historical situations. It wasn't the best episode, but it was pretty good. So apparently season three has some other serious clunkers along the season, so it'll be interesting to see those. But even Spock's brain, I mean, even though it was pretty bad, it was watchable, so I continue to be glad that I'm finally watching these, and adding that to my geek cred of having the knowledge of these episodes,
Yeah.
the series.
You're almost there.
Yeah, getting there, getting there. Even though it's only three seasons, they were all pretty long seasons.
Yeah. I mean, just looking at Wiki, it's not their best season, that's for sure.
No, but
It's like Buck Rogers.
yeah, I was kind of thinking that especially when I was watching Spock's brain, that even though we could acknowledge that season two wasn't as good, and there was only maybe like one episode that we outright were just like, this is not good. We found them all to be watchable, even though we didn't
Yeah,
find them to
yeah.
be
I
as
think there
good.
was only one we didn't like that we really didn't like.
Yeah, I mean, none of them
Everything
were.
else were taller, were good, and some we really liked.
Yeah,
There were
there was a
some
couple that were still
surprises.
good, and a lot that were just sort of tolerable, but there weren't many that just were downright out watchable where you wanted to turn it off,
Yeah.
And that's the same thing with Spock's brain. I mean, it was watchable and it was kind of entertaining at times, just as how goofy and strange it was.
Was
Like,
his brain detached or what? Or was it just like they mentally took his brain?
there was no special effect to show it, but you're meant to believe that his brain is not inside of his head.
So his body's surviving without the brain?
Yeah, I guess because he's Vulcan. And somehow that works, but
That's something to play on.
it's real goofy, it's real silly, and you just kind of go with it. And at moments, it's entertaining just because it's kind of amusing. Most of the time, you're thinking like, how did they think that this could work? Like,
Yeah.
what the hell were they thinking?
Right.
But so that's but that's about it for me.
Okay, I only have one more book, and it's also Aquaman. This is Aquaman Annual number 3.
This isn't the Fire and Water podcast, Mike.
Yeah. This one was an interesting theme, and one that I really enjoyed because I like pulp. And it's the Pulp Heroes annuals, and it's got like a lightheartedness to it, and kind of like a sense of humor to it. But it's weird to see Aquaman as like a detective, and this is what you see him. The first one's by Peter David, penciled by Marty Eglin, and really good art, really good story. This one I really liked, and this was the lighthearted one, especially for Peter David, because it was a detective story where, it opens up like a dark alley. I'm coming into the office and I'm approached by a female, a female that had tusks. like a dead man don't wear plaid, Steve Martin, or like a 40s detective pulp, like or pulp novels, which I haven't read, but you know the what it starts off as. And this one was really like that, where his secretary, and it looks like his lover's Dolphin, which it was his lover in the Peter David run too, more so than Mara. Dolphin was his woman, and she's like his secretary. And Mrs. Tusk comes, and Tusk is a female walrus, and she's like, "Aquaman, please help me find my husband, Tusky." And nobody understands what she's saying, but Aquaman does. And he's like, "Oh, Tusky, I remember him. I gotta go find him." And the last time he was seen was like in this shipwrecked ship at the bottom of the ocean called the U.S. Pawtucket. So he goes there, and it's really cool. Where the magic is the dialogue, because the dialogue makes him look like he's a detective. And it's just hilarious the way it is. But he goes into this ship. And it's full of toys, and he finds all these toys, and he's like, "What's going on?" Well, maybe I could trace it down to the toy source, and this is where he was last missing, and he's captured by two dudes, Minkus and Brian, and one's a big bulky dude, and one's a skinny dude, and they essentially capture him, and they toss him over into the ocean. Which is a bad idea for Aquaman. And he follows them into the city of Los Angeles and goes there. And when he gets the information, he busts their agency up, gets the information that that Tusky was given to this toy company, Hassan Brothers. And he traces it to Hassan Brothers, and he finds Tusky there, and he thinks they murdered him because he sees like this. These guys with a stuffed Tusky there, and it's really a stuffed animal, but he busts in there, is like, "What did you do to Tusky? He was a good animal. What did you do?" And he lifts it up, and it's a toy, and they're like, "Yeah, we're turning him into a cartoon character." And then he gets to meet Tusky, and Tusky's kind of like in one of those like SeaWorld tanks and stuff, and he's doing all kinds of displays for people, and looks like he's having a good time. And he's like, "Tusky, your wife is worried sick about you." And Tusky's like, "Well, that bitch, I've been trying to get away from her forever. And I really want to stay here. I'm enjoying life. Can you, me and you go way back, Aquaman? Can you hide from my wife that, that I'm alive?" And Aquaman agrees to it. It was just a crazy story. It's like, okay,
Sounds interesting, actually.
since you're happy, I will go back, and I discovered that you weren't murdered, so I'm okay with it. And you're happy being here. He just was miserable in his life. He was miserable with his wife, and he decided to leave. And he became a pop culture icon. And it's funny because Aquaman like pokes fun at cartoons in this, because the toy company guys like, "We really want you to be in Tusky's episode," and they already had the prototype cells, and like. Aquaman's like, "Cartoons suck. I would hate to be in a cartoon. Don't ever demean me by putting me in a cartoon." But that was a cool story, and it was a lighthearted one. The next one's more serious. It's like he's a detective, and it's called The Lady in Cement. This is written by Dan Abnett and Andy Landing, penciled by Anthony Williams. And this one opens up like he discovers this lady that had boot shoes. And cement dropped to the bottom of the ocean, and he's like, "This lady's absolutely beautiful. I've never come across anything like this before. She's dead, and I don't even know who she is, but I'm infatuated with her. I need to find out who her murderer is." So he goes out and questions people, and it's a detective thing where he actually traces it down to this evil corporation that's developing black mana technology that sends out sonic waves out through the ocean, but it makes these boats travel like extremely fast, but it kills sea life. So it turns into this big mystery where he's trying to find that, and he almost dies a couple times, but he gets to the end and he actually takes down that big boss and saves one of the dolphins, but the dolphin ends up having to stay at like a SeaWorld stuff because he lost his ability to not swim but to detect stuff. 'Cause that sonic technology really fucked him up. And the evil guy, the corporation, the rich Mongol that was coming up with that technology that killed the girl, he killed her because the girl found out that the technology was killing sea life and was gonna report it. So he basically put her in cement boots and dropped her in the middle of the ocean, and that's how Aquaman discovered her. But he was trying to kill Aquaman. He like turned this machine on to like full blast, and it drove the machine so hard that the pieces started to disassemble, and he kind of decapitated himself. But
Please.
it was a good story. The third one I didn't like too much. It was a Messner-Loeb story, and it was also a detective one where he had to go after this big crime boss. And the big catch to that one is the guy who you think is narrating the story, he doesn't look like Aquaman or anything, but he is Aquaman. He looks like one of those, like a built guy with an actual fish legs, like a merman. And it turns out to be actual Aquaman. That's the big catch to the story. So he's going undercover to find out, to take down this big crime lord that's pretty much untouchable. But this Pulp Heroes, I thought it was like amazing. Like I don't know if I could read a whole bunch of them back to back, but I would love to read the others, every other month, like tackle another Pulp Heroes because it was fun. The Dead Earth was the same way. So like I went from like hating annuals to really digging what the themes were and stuff, the Elseworlds and all this crazy shit that I
Yeah.
dig about them.
Yeah, I mean, if you're in the right mood for them, they can be really, really perfect. Like last time when I talked about all those Elseworlds, I would like to read more of the pulp heroes too, because I like the sort of the pulp genre, the pulp feel.
I don't know if you saw the cover I posted for number three, but it's absolutely beautiful. Like it, the cover is like a painted pulp look, like a pulp magazine look.
Oh, okay.
It looks amazing. It's got the lady that he finds with cement, and she's like at the bottom of the ocean, just swaying back and forth. It's absolutely beautiful. It's amazing. But that's the last of my comics.
Oh
Even
yeah,
though
there it
it
is.
was three of them, it was a lot of material because annuals, are like three comics almost back
Right.
in the day. So
Yeah, I just pulled it up. That is a beautiful cover. I like that a lot.
yeah, it looks very pulpy. Like
Yeah.
the painted art style looks like a pulp men's adventure magazine. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah, definitely.
So
Definitely going for that style. I like that style too.
I really dig it, and
Yeah.
I really liked it. Because it went from like serious tone stories, and it lightened them up just a little bit. And like I love the a female comes into my office. She's got tusks. I
Yeah.
just love that shit. I just think it's great. But
When the
that's
women were dames.
yeah. So yeah, it's really cool stories. Different, like the Aquaman 1,000,000 was way into the future, on a planet Neptune. Pulp Heroes was taking Aquaman into detective genre, in like a pulp time frame, and then Dead Earth was like post-apocalyptic superhero stuff. So very different stories, but all very interesting.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, it's fun. I had a good time. All right, so
Good
I think
times.
that's it.
Yeah, shorter episode. No TV or movies, and
Yeah, I didn't post any
no
questions either.
questions.
Yeah, I was lazy.
That's okay though.
I would have usually posted them in the morning, but with all that happened, I went to bed like really late, and I was like so tired. I just zapped out, and I got up early as shit again, which is like 5:30, so I was like, that's cool. But around 6 o'clock, I was like, man, I want to go back to bed. So I went back to bed and I slept till 7:30, and I'm like, oh shit, it's late. I have to walk Harley. I took her on a short walk because and get breakfast. So I had to go, Carl's Jr. and grab some breakfast for us. And I was like, I ain't gonna make the long walk. So I'll take her for a short one and then take her for a long one later. Like I did yesterday. Yesterday I did two long ones, but it's good for me to start walking again. Now that I'm kind of over my cold, I still sound a little congested, but sort of back to normal. I'm getting ready to go see Dad
That's
again,
good.
the holidays.
Yeah, are you guys going down there for Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
That's good. He's continuing to recuperate.
Slowly, but there's improvements every day. So that's a good thing. My
That's good.
brother's there now, so it'll give my mom a little bit of a breather and break.
Yeah,
She'll have the
that's
grandchildren
good.
there, so yeah. It'll lighten her mood a little bit. And plus she's in a better mood 'cause my dad's more like himself. He's like calling like on the phone now too, so it's like talking to him regularly. He like gives me updates on his improvements and stuff. They're slow, but he could bend his knee like 50% now with assistance. And the other day he was able to sit in a chair without rails, which was like a big improvement. Like those physical therapists are tough, man. Like my dad was telling the physical therapist, I can't do this. I
Yeah, I've
can't
heard
do this.
that.
And the physical therapist is like, what do you mean you can't do this? You're gonna do this. You're gonna sit in the goddamn chair. And sure enough, he was able to do it and he was all happy about it. So yeah, he's making slow progress, but I'm hoping by
That's good.
Christmas. I was hoping by Thanksgiving he'd be home, but it doesn't look like that. But I would expect maybe by the second week of December for sure. And he's like walking on the walker now on his own, which that means that a physical therapist doesn't have to put the belt around him. But I told you on IM what happened. It was pretty much streptococcus bacteria attacking his bad knee, and it just like happened in less than 24 hours. I don't know how it got there. Nobody's ever gonna know. And then the fact that he was up here in Colorado when it happened, and the hospital kind of misdiagnosed it initially, didn't help matters because they didn't drain it. They saw this big old puffed knee, and they were like, "Oh, that's probably a gout flare up. Take these pills, you'll feel better in a couple of days." And it was bad. Like my dad was in pain. We had to call the emergency, 911, and get him to the hospital because we couldn't move him. And when my dad says that, he's never been in a hospital, And it's painful because my whole life I've never seen him shed a tear, like for anything. And when
So you
he's
know it's bad.
in tears, it's bad. And then you're dealing with all the drugs and all the other crap that drugs will fuck you up, painkillers will fuck you up. They'll make you not yourself, depressed and all kinds of other stuff. So you're dealing with all kinds of crap, and painkillers also cause severe constipation, and it's just you're constantly battling certain things. But I think he's doing better, and I think he'll be home in maybe 2 weeks, two weeks max, 1 week, 1 week hopeful, It's just that a
No, that's
lot of the
good.
PT guys are off for the holidays and stuff, so I don't know if they'll make an assessment this week to say, yeah, he's okay to go home. But it was a serious thing, man. As soon as the doctor saw it, in Albuquerque, this is a rheumatologist that treats his gout. He's like, he didn't even, he just looked at it and he's like, Manuel, that's not gout. He's like, he pulled out a needle, he drained it. The doctor was really amazing because he moved fast. He was like, this is an infection. He says, I don't know what's infected. I pulled all, seven vials of crap out of your knee. He says, I'm calling. You're going to go have an emergency surgery today. So they moved fast. And then it was hospital usually kicks you out, but for something like an infection, they can't because you could lose limbs. It couldn't spread. It could be really serious. So the hospital will treat you not until you can walk and stuff, but until they think that they've gotten the infection under control. And once they got it under control, then it's okay, we got to treat the pain now, and we got to treat the you being able to walk. So yeah, it's one of those weird things, man. You never think will happen, but it does.
Well, at least he's, even though it's a slow progress, at least he's, it's going in the right direction.
Yeah, those first
So.
2 weeks were pure hell. I mean, after that, things started to go in the positive direction. Because up before that, it was like a roller coaster. You'd have one day where he was okay, and then he would have a horrible day. It was like you didn't know what to expect from day to day. It was terrible. And now it's at least more consistent. Like it's building towards common goals, and there are improvements every day. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, once you stabilized and you have a long enough stretch of time that is continued improvement, you can start to relax and know that things are gonna get there.
Yeah.
You,
One
but
thing
when you have
I've
that.
learned though is my dad has treated so many people so well that they're really coming through to help him out, like his
That's
brothers
good.
and sisters, and a lot of times just friends, like some of the firefighters that, like my dad has this, he was a firefighter and he has this best friend and he goes and sees him every day for hours, you know what I mean?
Nice.
He really and that's really helpful too because he'll help my mom. Like if my mom says I can't do this to the car or I can't do this or whatever, he'll take care of it and or help her with it. And that's pretty freaking amazing. And I have to do shit that I don't like. I'm the worst hands-on like guy you could possibly. I'm usually attached to a computer and programming, but when it comes to like fixing a fucking washing machine or dealing with a 1950s heater, like servicing it, I'm fucking horrible. Like I'm like the worst. I didn't inherit any of my skills that my dad is good at, which is using his hands to do work. But I had to learn, man. I got the washer fixed, which it just like everything started to break. The washer started spewing water like one of those misters in the back, and I was like, "Oh fuck, what do I do?" And I had to go take apart the washer. It was one of the nozzles, but towards the base of it, and replace those. And then this old 1950, it was like impossible. I had my uncles come over to help me light this pilot light, and they were like, "I've never seen anything like this in my life." It took three of us to get it to work the first time, and then the night of when it was freezing, it went out, and I'm like,
Jeez.
"Motherfucker!" And so that morning I was able to start it on my own, and I found out, I read a lot of the little. It has like a hand-drawn diagram on it and all kinds of weird shit. And I said, what if I attack this by not trying to push down on it from the top, but with the lighter, try to light it like from the bottom. And I did it and it worked. And I was like, wow, that wasn't as bad, but it was horrible if you try to do it from the top. It's like, nope, that's why nobody can figure it out, because usually you put it into like pilot mode and you click it and things go on. This wasn't like that. It was like there was no instructions and it kept on saying push down. Well, you couldn't fucking physically push down on this thing. There was like this little latch in this metal lever, and that had to hit and go down, but it doesn't go down much. It just moves it down enough so you can light the pilot. But yeah, everything started to break, and even the TV went out. And then my mom called a number for Comcast that was a hacker, and I'm like, "Give me the phone. They shouldn't be asking you for this goddamn information." So yeah, it was a real treat.
Jeez. When it rains, it pours.
Yeah, it was horrible. They were
Man.
like telling my mom, turn on the computer. I was like, how does this motherfucker even know you have a computer? How does a level one technician at a cable know you're getting hacked by Jamaica? Come on, man.
Jeez.
They're supposed to tell you how to turn your TV on and reboot your system. That they're not supposed to tell you you're being hacked by three IPs around the world. Come on.
Right, yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's they take advantage of people that don't have the knowledge.
Yeah,
Yeah,
motherfuckers.
I can't stand that either.
When I got the phone, it was weird because it sounded like a call center, but I knew immediately just by the what he was asking.
Right.
I mean, I'm trained well enough to know what's real and what's not. I'm
Yeah.
like, motherfucker, this guy is fishing for information.
Right, the fishing, yeah.
Yeah, he's not doing a goddamn thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's like everything was busting, and it was just like one after another.
Jeez.
I was, what else is gonna happen? You know?
Right. Yeah, you just start expecting some
And then
things
the
to happen.
hospital was like 45 minutes away. So I was driving like 2 hours, maybe sometimes 3 or 4 hours a day, just taking care of things, you know. Now it's like real close to the house, so that's a huge benefit, because my mom will at least drive it. And my mom would never drive that far. Like, she just won't. She wouldn't drive herself to the hospital, so I
Yeah.
had to drive her. But this place is close enough that,
That's good.
yeah. But it was one of those crazy things, you know.
Yeah.
A vacation turned into a nightmare kind of thing.
Yeah, really. Well, at least things have settled down.
Yeah, they're settled. Now I just have to deal with Harley's diarrhea.
Yeah.
And she's fine. She wants to eat. She's out in the sunshine right now. And she
Yeah,
loved
Maple's
that
still.
thing, but I'm scared to give her the other one because it came in a 2-pack. It's hard sometimes. Is it that, or is it
Right.
because I dropped a fucking cookie on the floor and she found it, you know? I don't know.
It could have been that. It's just something that she's not normally supposed to have, or.
I looked everywhere. I was podcasting last night and I got hungry. It was like, you know, after midnight, and I said, I'm gonna eat a cookie. And these are real crunchy cookies that Barb made. And I bit into it and it broke in half, and half of it fell on the floor. And I literally looked everywhere for this cookie. I couldn't find it. But guess who did find it?
Yeah.
Yeah, Miss Harley Quinn.
All she has to do is use her powerful nose, and
Yeah.
she'll find it.
That's right.
But Mabel's still chewing away on that thing she's got.
Yeah, with her ears
It's keeping her
sticking
occupied.
out.
Yeah, they just popped up because her mom opened a door somewhere. She had to
Listen.
take in that information.
Yeah. Well, it was good talking to you, my brother. We can wrap
Same
this one
here.
up. You can
All
reach
right.
us at geekbrunchpodcast.com, and emails mythmakingetc@gmail.com, and mike@comicbooknoise.com. Our Twitters are at mythmakingetc and Mike Myers Brunch. And on Facebook, you could look for the Geek Brunch podcast with spaces, and click the like button and follow all the episode threads, including our other podcasts that come out, Mythmaking ETC, From Kid to Flash, and Mike M's Weekly Reads. So,
OG Geek Brunch.
yeah, and Geek Brunch, the original Geek Brunch.
The Bill
I
Bomer show.
just, yeah, the Bill Bomer show.
That's what he calls it.
Yeah, that's what he does call it. He takes total ownership of everything. Unless something goes bad, then it's my show. If things are going good, it's his. But yeah, it was good talking to you. And after the holidays, maybe we could do another one or two before Christmas break,
Yeah, try to
on
fit one in there and
how it turns out.
yeah, we'll talk. We could maybe plan to watch something or just get some questions or something.
Yeah, maybe we could do like one regular and one really short one, and then the holiday.
The holiday
Yeah.
Festivus for the rest of us.
Festivus. We celebrate Festivus. We get to yell at each other.
You son of a bitch.
Right, talk to you later.
All
Have a good Sunday.
right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You too. Bye.